So before we get down to business, I just wanted to give a big thank you to everyone who's been listening to our podcast so far on this journey, and to invite you to be a part of it even more. If you go to circularity.org/podcast, you'll find a link on there to send us a message. And you can send us a message about anything, really. You could ask us a question about a part of the project or anything related to anything you'd like us to answer, I suppose. Or you could make a point or give us some feedback from an event you've been to, talk about your circularity experiences, or just send us an idea. That'd be cool. Or something you'd like to try. So yeah, we're open to anything. So if you go to circularity.org/podcast, you'll find your link on there. This particular episode is centered around the theme of authenticity. And Sophie sent us a message telling us what she thought about authenticity and what it meant to her.
Hi, it's Sophie here. I think when it comes to authenticity, it is about not being what you think others should think you should be, but more being who you really are on the inside. And there's one phrase that I once heard that says, what somebody else thinks of me is none of my actual business. And I think that's a really powerful thing to help people be their most authentic selves.
Hello, it's Chris here. You're listening to the Circularity Podcast. I'm on my lonesome this evening, today, whenever you're hearing it, really. And it's been a fantastic start to 2020. We started life with the Wellbeing Wagon. We brought a new event to life called Circularity Play. We've had a Connect. We've had a couple of TED Circles. It's been wonderful. It's been a really great time for people to come together to change their mindsets from me to we. And one of the connects that we held was called, or centered around, the theme of authenticity. You can find out more about what the Connect events are at circularity.org/connect. And this particular one was, as I say, all about authenticity. And we had a local musician, Craig Gold, come to tell us his story, effectively, and tell us about his history, you know, where he's come from and why he made some changes in his life to make it a little bit more authentic. Just in terms of, you know, for kind of a bit of a trigger warning, really, there are going to be themes in this to do with male mental health, to do with thoughts around suicide, and to do with aspects of things to do with kind of, you know, drink and, you know, different ways of sort of coping with poor mental health. So, just to kind of put that out there to begin with, for you to make a choice of, to, you know, whether you want to enjoy listening to it or not. But it's a fascinating story with a pretty cool ending. And Craig's going to be doing some fantastic things in the future with music and with creativity. So I'm going to hand over to Craig.
So I'm going to start off, I'll go to 2016. So I was a senior manager on the railway. I managed six managers, and then they had the teams, which amounted to about 180 people. 30 train stations. It was all in my areas of responsibility. Yeah, so I had a really good job, as it's seen as in the world, earning really good money. I'd bought a house with my fiance a couple of years before, and in that year I got married as well. I was in a band, although I wasn't playing music then. I finished that in 2014. We played with Levellers, Ocean Colour Scene, some really great bands, played at some great festivals. So I weren't doing that, so I've got a great job, money, bought a house, wife, used to be in a band, sounds pretty cool, yeah? So you think, oh, well, what's wrong with that? What's that guy going to have to grumble about, make him not happy, or so on? A few comments of people that I used to work, if they said things about me, and a few people did. I knew one of the directors said, Craig, you're always smiling. I wish everyone was as happy as you at work. I'm like, yeah. And I was happy at times, and that's saying I wasn't. But that's the sort of persona that I had in that. We're going to go to November the 16th, 2016. And it was about 20 to 2 in the afternoon, and I regained consciousness on the platform at Birmingham New Street. I'd collapsed. I'd hit my head on the platform quite bad. As this chip I've got on my front now, if I frown, you can see, or if you catch me in the right sun, you'll see it. But yeah, come around on the platform, didn't know where I was, covered in blood, paramedics coming. Didn't really know what was happening. Got took to hospital. Kind of blacked out again in hospital, woke up not knowing where I was. Wires connected to me, tried to run away. Sick, flying everywhere. Then went into shock, which basically meant I was just shaking for about 2.5 hours. And that's when my wife arrived at the hospital to see me just, well, in a state. just in a state. The suit I had on was I kept the waistcoat from what I got married in, and I'd got sick and blood all over it. She weren't happy. But they thought that I'd had a stroke. So they did a CT scan on me, but all my brain activity was fine. Heart rate was fine and everything. So they were like, look, maybe it's something not physical, maybe it's mental. We've got a discharger, off you go. Go and see your GP the day after. Oh, okay. So, they said, if you're sick again, you need to go straight back to hospital. Got home. Somehow, my wife got me home because I just didn't want to be in the car. Sick everywhere. She's like, we got to go back to the hospital. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going back. Went to the doctors the day after and was diagnosed with a severe mental breakdown, which was caused, well, not caused, I'm not saying this stuff or starting to share my story for blaming anything. I'm trying to raise awareness of what happened. But one of the main triggers for it was stress and exhaustion from work, because at the time I'd been doing two jobs, both for similar companies, but it had been a lot of work. And it caught up with me. And I'd been in management roles for about 8 years. And I think my body just went, yeah, I've had enough here. And now I'm going to go back in time now and say, well, how did I feel before that, when I collapsed? Because it does sound a bit daft that you're living this great life and you just collapse. But how did I feel? Well, I can probably now, looking back, say that I wasn't well for about 2 years before I collapsed. I felt like I had the flu probably for about 6 months before I collapsed. I had terrible pain across the back of my shoulders and in my neck, which was just tension. Speaking with Christy the other night when we had a cup of tea, I thought that I needed to exercise those shoulders so I'd be at home with my weights. Gotta sort these shoulders out. Totally doing the wrong things, but you can only do what you think you can do. Probably about a year before collapse, I went to the opticians because I was having problems seeing, especially when I was in meetings. Couldn't focus on people who were opposite me. And they advised I change my prescription to a different type of lens because it could be that. Went to the doctors because at times I had a tight chest and I was smoking at the time. So it's the smoking, mate. I suppose it's going to be the smoking. Okay, it's the smoking. Fine. Used to say to people at work, I feel exhausted, I feel knackered, don't feel great. And when you're in those senior management roles, the response you get is, comes with a job. So it comes with a job, mate. Yeah, I have to wind down for a few beers. So the clues were there for a long time, but I didn't know what they were to understand what was up with me. And I probably started to use alcohol as a method to deal with those feelings, put them to the side, have a few beers after work, let your hair down. Now, looking back, I can see that there were some issues. And when you're in those management roles, you have to do a lot of things that don't necessarily sit comfortable with you, don't resonate with who you are naturally or what you think's right. You have to do what makes money or sets an example. Now I'm going to quickly talk about how I felt after when I collapsed. The diagnosis of having a severe mental breakdown is great, but that's about as far as the GP went with me. So I was just sent home with some antidepressants. Like, you need to just chill out, mate. Take it easy for a couple of weeks, see how you go. Oh, okay. Now, for me to get to the doctor's, which is literally half a mile from my house, it took me the best part of 3.5 hours. Because every time I tried to leave the house, I had panic attacks that were that crippling. I thought that I was going to die. I couldn't get out. I had to get there eventually by phoning my mum and getting my mum to talk to me on the phone so I could get there.
But you try and explain this to the GP, they've got 5 minutes and they just want you out. Luckily, the healthcare package that my work provided me with a therapist who I could speak to over the phone because I couldn't get out of the house, who was fantastic and explained to me that I'd never get this put on a sick note, but in effect, my body had shut down because it couldn't take what I was doing anymore. And it's a defence mechanism, that's why I collapsed. And it's brilliant, but what it doesn't do is start itself. You've got to do that yourself. So yeah, it took a long time. Constantly felt like I was going to be sick all day. Couldn't see straight. Crippling anxiety. My wife had to go to work, and I'm there crying at the door because I don't think she's going to get home because the car's going to crash. It's just every day. So I'd just sit at home crying until she come home. Night tremors were awful. I'd wake up in tears as if I'd just collapsed. 3 a.m, like the worst alarm clock ever. I know this is a bit dark, but the only way I could see of getting out of it was if I wasn't around anymore. And that's not because I know that sometimes with these things you can feel worthless and not part of stuff, but the option of not being on the planet anymore was the only way I could see that I could stop myself feeling so shit. That's how bad it felt. But I didn't want to do that, although I considered it and thought about it a few times. I was fortunate enough to have the support of my wife, my family, and some great friends who were there to keep pulling me through when I did feel like that. It was after about 5 months from when I collapsed that I tried to get back to work. I'd done a lot of meditation, a lot of therapy, CBT, and had to make a lot of changes to enable me to start just getting out of the house and then being able to speak with people and so on and so forth. Managed to get to the point of getting back to work, but the work doctor had made me unfit for my role, which is right, because he said, if I send you back to that job, it'll kill you. So I was on like a restricted, go into the office, shuffle some paperwork and make some tea 3 times a week. Try and get yourself back into it. When I started doing that and using the train again, I found that instead of getting back into the routine and feeling more comfortable with it, I was going backwards. Panic attacks got worse, flashbacks, everything, it just got terrible. And it took me about 5 months to start getting better, and within about 5 weeks I felt like I was near enough back where I started. And it was probably that point where I thought, if I stay here any longer, this is going to kill me. Something's got to change. There were so many things that didn't feel right when I went back to work. And I think when you are involved with big companies or corporations, you realise that when you are no longer any use to them, whilst they'll do something for you for a certain amount of time, they'll only do a certain bit until they won't do much more. And that's not something, I'm not doing any of this to sort of for blaming anything. This is about focusing on how I felt and how I got through it. But I made the decision that I needed to do something else. And that was when I started having to look at, what do I have to do to get better? And I started to have to think about who I was when I was a little boy and what I enjoyed and what excited me. And one of those things was playing with my Lego. So
I set up a new Lego company. No, joke. It was building stuff. Now, I did studied product design at university with the aim of like doing design work or building stuff and that. I never did anything with it. I ended up on the railway by chance and it just went from there. I decided that I had to try and do something. After I left the railway, I couldn't go and just get a job somewhere because I'd have to go and say, hiya, I've got all these skills here, amazing, but I don't even know if I'm going to be in tomorrow. Because 6 months, I mean, looking back now, I can honestly say it took about 2 years to be able to sit and function normally, full time, and cope with normal life. It took 2 years from it. So I decided to set up an online shop because that would enable me to do some bits at home, try working, see how long I could work for in a day or in a week, and see if I could make some money out of it. And then with that, I could concentrate on it. It'll give me some focus, but I can concentrate on me actually evaluate what I need to do. And I've made a list here of all the things that I had to change to be alive. It's as simple as that. And a lot of it comes through because I had to think of who I actually was, what my values were, and stop putting myself in positions that contradict them. Management roles for big corporations. I'm not saying people who work those jobs are nasty or anything, but there's a certain personality type that suits those roles and does very well at them. And I don't think it was for me. And I tried. I stopped drinking because drinking could make me feel anxious the next day. So I got rid of that. I stopped smoking because I like to drink with a smoke. And I like to smoke with a drink. So both had to go. Sleep, I had to sort out. So I had proper sleep and said, oh, I'm going to bed. Had to reduce caffeine. I had to start listening to people more, but also learning how to ignore people to protect myself. CBT was amazing. It's about reprogramming the brain, which was something that I needed to have because I was just having awful panic attacks. But I was safe. I was fine. A couple of the things that was explained to me was basically a panic attack puts you into your fight or flight natural. Mm-hmm. So it would kick in. So you would be able to run, get away, or fight to survive. We don't have that now, but we still have that within us. And our brain triggers it off when there's nothing there for you to worry about. Mm-hmm. But it was about learning to be able to tell myself that there wasn't a T-Rex around the corner. And I could walk to Wilkinson's and get a tin of paint. Yeah, but I had to learn how to listen to my body and to myself. A lot of the stuff behind that was because me and my wife had spoke about being parents for a long time, but I couldn't even look after myself. And I knew I had to try and focus on something because I wanted to be a dad at some point. Now, all of that stuff, you can read all that stuff and it'll say, well, this is a good idea to try this and that's a good idea to try this. But in the end, I had to understand who I was and go back to what made me feel comfortable, not what I thought I had to do, what I thought I had to behave like to mix in with certain circles that would network my career. That was a whole process. Well, I mean, I'm still doing it now. I'm not saying that I'm a finished article here because I never will be. None of us will be. I can sit here and talk to you about it now. I couldn't have done this 2 years ago. My work now, I run my own company, designing and building furniture. It's only me. I don't want to manage anyone again for a while because I can choose my work. I can choose when to go to work and I can choose when not to. While there's still that area of vulnerability there, I don't need to put that pressure on myself with having someone else. Now, that means that some jobs I can't take on and I can't do as much work to make money, but I don't care because I'm paying the bills and feel great. I know you see these, I'm a successful business person, you know, and it's because they've made X amount of millions. Well, you can be successful by just doing what you love and paying the bills. That's success. And the biggest success really is my son is 3 and a bit months old, and that's the best thing I could have wished to get to.
But it was having to evaluate who I was and just stop trying to do what I thought I needed to do to be a success. Big car, big house and all that. That's my thing.
Yeah. Really hope you enjoyed listening to Craig's story. And, you know, maybe there are a few things that you related to in that. Maybe there are a few things that you didn't, but you were kind of listening empathetically and you know, giving Craig some time to kind of tell his story. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. We've got some pretty wonderful things happening at the minute whereby, I think if you kept up with the podcast, you should have heard on the last few that we're going to be running a community managed library in Woodville in South Derbyshire. And that's spurred on this whole kind of journey of people wanting to come and help out with circularity and be a part of it, which is just great. So basically what we've set up is a page on the website at circularity.org/join-us. And that's all lowercase. There's no hyphen in it or anything like that. So it's circularity.org/join-us. And on there, you can basically sign up to be a part of what we're trying to create. So there are a few different roles on there, from, you know, events coordinators or helping out with live sound at an event, or being a performer or a host, or wanting to, you know, run your own Connect event, or be involved in our TED circles in some way, or anything like that. So yeah, do keep up with that, circularity.org/join-us. And there are some fantastic opportunities to train as librarians and be part of our community managed library, which we're hopefully going to grow into something pretty special for our local area. Equally, I know that there are a lot of people that listen to this podcast overseas and not anywhere near Woodville in South Derbyshire in the UK. You know, we're really eager to work with people about how we spread this sort of project wider around the world. We've got a few different ideas as to how we could do that. So do get in touch at info@circularity.org and let us know that you want to get involved, and we can start that journey together. That'd be pretty cool. In the meantime, we've got some fantastic events in March, so you're going to want to come to them for sure. Starting with our Circularity Play, the second of these particular events, which is on March the 11th, that's a Wednesday, and that's at the National Brewery Centre in Burton-on-Trent. It starts at 7 p.m. and it's free entry. Donations are welcome, and it's just a fantastic night full of kind of, you know, adults playing games effectively together. So if you go to circularity.org/play, you can find out a load more stuff about that event and what it's about. I've got our Circularity Rise on March the 14th. This is all about giving people that sort of space to perform live in front of a supportive audience. Maybe they're not quite ready for an open mic or a gig. So that's on Saturday the 14th of March, and that runs actually in the afternoon now, from 3 p.m. through till 7 p.m. And the idea behind that is so that, you know, children and families can come and enjoy some live music together effectively. You haven't got to worry about sitters or anything like that. So again, historically that one's been free entry with donations welcome, and I can't see us changing that for this time. We've got our TED Circle on Sunday the 15th, that's hosted by myself. At the National Brewery Centre again, and we're going to start that one this time at 11 a.m. It'll go through to 1 p.m. and yeah, if you go to tedcircles.com, you can find out a little bit more about that. Following that, we're gearing up to our library launch, which is going to be initially on April the 17th, which we'll give an opportunity for us to try out before what we're calling our hard launch on May the 8th. So yeah, do get involved with all things Circularity. We've got our radio show every Tuesday on Derby Sound Community Radio, bringing our community together in sound from me to we. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff going on. So make sure you go and have a look on our social media accounts at circularity.org, the Circularity Association page, and the Circularity group on Facebook. We'll see you in a month's time for another podcast. In the meantime, enjoy.